designing, manufacturing, installing, and maintaining the high-speed electronic computer, the largest and most complex computers ever built.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Building Better Systems, the podcast where we explore tools and approaches that make us more effective engineers and make our systems safer and more reliable. My name is Shpat Morina.
And I'm Joey Dodds.
Joey and I work at GAWA, a computer science R&D lab focused broadly on hard computer science problems. Today's episode is a little bit different. We have with us Alex Malazimov. That's a principal researcher at GAWA as well, and then Mark Rosen, a research engineer at GAWA. Mark and Alex have recently published a paper on a novel system for censorship circumvention, and we thought we'd hear about it because it's really interesting stuff. Alex and Mark, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. If you're okay with it, I'd love to hear kind of whoever wants to start kind of in your own words, what, well, first of all, what the project is called and at a high level, what it is.
Sure. So this project is about building a resilient and anonymous messaging system. This has a lot of connections with censorship in general. So the goal of a messaging system is to be able to operate in a country or an environment in which there's a sensor trying to block certain types of communication. The project that we are working on at GAWA is called Rocky, and this particular system that we're going to talk about today is called Balboa. And Balboa is a system for circumventing censorship broadly using, or it operates by working under the TLS protocol essentially. So it uses existing communications that are operating over TLS and does various tricks to reuse that communication to send covert data.
With some existing point-to-point censorship circumvention messaging systems, is that it's very, very difficult to actually make a communication that looks exactly like something else. So the trick that we, or the goal of Balboa, is to basically take some communication that the sensor doesn't want to allow and make it look identical to something that the sensor does want to allow, so that they can't block one without blocking the other.
I see. So this basically piggybacks on TLS, you said?
Yes, exactly. For censorship in general, the sensor could easily censor content by blocking everything, right? If you don't allow any communication through, then it's very easy for a sensor to do censorship. But obviously, there's a trade-off here because the sensor would want some communication to go through, because otherwise, you don't get the sensor doesn't get the benefits of having existing in the broader world and being able to connect using the internet, while also being able to censor content. So there's a trade-off that the sensor has, and that's really what we're exploiting. So the sensor needs to let some communication through, but it only wants to let the communication through that it doesn't want to censor. And so if we can hide the covert data that we're sending in communication that looks innocuous, looks like something that the sensor is fine letting through, then that's a way we can kind of exploit this concern that the sensor has.
So presumably there's something that didn't exist in previous censorship circumvention kind of ways and mechanisms in Balboa that you're proud of or excited about. What makes it special?
Yeah, so the key difference between Balboa and previous similar approaches is that if you want to try to make network traffic look like something in particular, so let's say you want to make browsing the New York Times look like just listening to music streaming, a lot of previous approaches decided to manually code some sort of model of what internet radio would look like. So they would say, oh, first you send a packet of this length and it contains with this particular timing. And the problem is that actually getting that exactly right and exactly mimicking all of the little changes, some of which the sensor can actually influence, is incredibly difficult. So the key thing that Balboa does that's unique is Balboa is a framework which lets us take an existing unmodified application binary, so for example, for VLC, and use this unmodified binary by dynamically injecting some code into it, which lets us use VLC. VLC runs just as normal, generating the traffic that it would normally generate, but we stick some extra data in there that we can use to communicate messages.
Yeah, and that's a key point, is using unmodified existing applications. So there are several censorship circumvention tools that say use a specific version of Firefox. However, Firefox gets updated all the time. And actually, there's been evidence that certain sensors will look for a particular version of Firefox, because that is the version that is used for these censorship circumvention tools. It's maybe 2 years out of date for what the current version of Firefox is. So very small number of users are using it, and they tend to be the ones using this censorship circumvention tool. So there's all of these subtle things that the sensor is picking up on to detect these tools. And really the key insight of Balboa is, let's run the applications as is. And the behavior of the applications is exactly the behavior of the application without any covert data going through. And then we use these tricks of dynamic library injection and carefully swapping out the data such that the traffic patterns and everything about the communication patterns of the applications is identical. And yet there's covert data going through.
So you're sending data, but if somebody's looking at the data coming out of, let's say, I mean, VLC doesn't necessarily stream, but let's say...
Let's take Firefox, right? So you're browsing some website that involves, you know, a GET request, and then there is, you get the text, you get the images and whatnot. And that, some of those images, when being sent out by the server, can be swapped out with covert data. Now, from the point of view of the adversary, again, because we are using TLS, because of all this communication is encrypted, they see what exactly they would see if the user was browsing the normal website. But under the hood, instead of the Firefox user getting that image, they get covert data.
Interesting. I don't quite know how TLS works, but is there a way to analyze whether the amount of data was different from the image that you were supposed to receive? Like, I'm assuming you've done the homework on if somebody's looking at this, it looks exactly the same.
So TLS, just like many other encryption protocols, doesn't hide metadata about the content. So in particular, the lengths of TLS records and also the time at which these records are sent. And it turns out this information, this metadata, can actually leak a lot of information. So for example, there are papers showing that if you can just observe the packet timings and lengths, you can, in some cases, figure out what website someone's browsing, even though you can't actually see the content at all. Similarly, with Skype audio encryption, people have done work to show that even though the audio data is itself encrypted, the timing and length of the audio packets that are being sent let you figure out what people are saying. So the one of the things that we make sure to do with Balboa is make sure that we don't change any of the metadata that the adversary can see. So either the sizes or the timings. The timings we do, right, we have to do some extra processing. So the timings are going to be slightly different, but we've put in a lot of effort to make sure that these timings are in the microsecond range. And beyond that, we've been working on various evaluation techniques using machine learning random forest classifiers to try to look at various features of the TLS connection that the adversary can see, this metadata, to try to see if an adversary would be able to tell the difference between Balboa and not Balboa.
Yeah, and one key point I left out in the description. So I mentioned that the Firefox user, instead of getting the image, gets the covert data, right? But actually, what we do under the hood is we swap back in the original image that was meant to be sent. And so this gets to something that we haven't touched on before, which is that we require that the two users have what we've been calling a traffic model. And this is, they essentially know ahead of time some of the data that is going to be sent between the two parties. So imagine you're connecting to New York Times. There's the New York Times logo, right? The user can know that ahead of time. Maybe there's some specific blurbs or something that always appear. And again, that's something that the user can be aware of ahead of time. So while under the hood, when the web server is sending out, instead of sending out the say New York Times logo, it sends out covert data. Under the hood on the client side, it receives the covert data and then swaps back in the New York Times logo. So from the point of view of the Firefox user, they see exactly what they would expect to see when browsing New York Times.
Oh, interesting.
This is important also in terms of making sure that the adversary can't see what's going on. Since you could imagine, for example, if I'm streaming a video, the rate at which I'm going to request new frames of video is going to depend on the rate at which I'm consuming those frames, which in turn depends on the amount of like CPU processing I'm doing to decode them. So if we were to just say, okay, we're going to throw away all the video data and just be like, here's a black square, then it's possible that the adversary could basically see, oh, this machine's consuming data at a weird rate, and then detect that Balboa's running. So as a result, we make sure that the original data is swapped back into place.
Can you help me understand this, I guess, a little more from the user side? So I'm some pair of individuals, it sounds like, is who would likely want to use this. And maybe we have a channel that we can say some stuff, but not so much. And we sort of say, we're going to use this technology somehow on this other channel. And then it's going to look like installing something on our, could you just sort of take me through how that might look? I don't know how much of the work you've done to make this usable. But just to understand, I guess, how this would feel as a user, I think would help me understand what's going on a little more.
Yeah. So I think, while we're talking about the user using Firefox, in practice, if we were actually to give someone an application, say, here is a censorship circumvention tool, the user wouldn't be manually going in and clicking links and doing stuff in sort of the shadow version of Firefox. Instead, there's a program that we have which simulates, oh, you want to go to this particular special website and click various links and interact with it to make Firefox end up sending and receiving data. So in terms of like what the actual experience would be like for a user, basically we're just building a communication tool. You could totally imagine that if you wanted to, you could build this into Matrix or some other front end for actual communication, but you can think of this as basically the TCP of censorship circumvention.
So yeah, so from the point of view of how would you deploy this? So we do rely on this traffic model, the shared information that the two parties have. And additionally, we rely on a symmetric key that the two parties both share. From there, one of the parties, say if we're using web browsing, can launch a web server that hosts, let's say, a computer science blog or something. And what's another nice feature of Balboa is that blog can be accessed by anyone. Because we are doing all of this swapping out under the hood, any user that's not running Balboa can access that blog, read the blog, whatnot. And then the user on the other side that is running Balboa and has the shared information could then either manually or through, like Mark said, some automated process, access this blog, manually clicking through the links or by using a script for scripting Firefox user actions to make it look like a normal user, and from that get covert data. So there is some setup required. There is some symmetric key setup and this deployment of these traffic models that is required. But from there, it really looks like any normal connection to that website.
And that's necessary to some extent, because the more people use different types of blogs, for example, or different settings, the harder it's going to be to figure out what's going on in this setting, presumably, if everybody used the same prepackaged blog.
Yeah, you can even imagine hosting this on a very popular website. I mean, I imagine the New York Times would be blocked in many of the places that could use something like Balboa, but let's use New York Times as an example, supposing it's not blocked, right? You could imagine running Balboa even on the New York Times website. And the parties that have the particular information required to get COVID data from the New York Times website can, and every other user can access the New York Times website as they normally would. So it could even be a high value website that the censor is not willing to block.
So you can broadcast information essentially to people.
Yes.
Although I guess the key exchange is right. Cause right. There's two sides of this. One is that you don't want people to see the thing that you want to say that they might censor, but the other is presumably you really don't want anybody to know you're doing censorship evasion. So keeping things secret is also important from that standpoint.
Yeah. But even if the censor knows, so let's suppose there's a website, again, let's just use New York Times as an example that the censor does not want to block for whatever reason. Even in that case, so the censor knows that New York Times is running Balboa under the hood. It still cannot know which particular users are accessing New York Times and are running Balboa, even if it's monitoring all of the connections to the New York Times.
Because all of the traffic looks exactly the same, it sounds like.
Exactly.
So short of blocking all of the internet, presumably, that's at least the claim.
Yeah, or the particular website that, because so one of the downsides of Balboa versus some other tools is it's a direct link. So the two parties have a direct TCP connection to each other. Other tools, use third-party services to redirect traffic and whatnot to make it harder to block. So if the censor, say, knows that the New York Times is running Balboa and is willing to block that website, then that's one way of defeating Balboa. But if either they don't know that the website is running Balboa or they're not willing to block that website, those are the two settings, I think, where Balboa will work best.
But is there a way to detect whether their server is running this?
Hopefully, no. I guess Mark can maybe go into some details, but I guess Mark carefully designed the piece to avoid these types of attacks. And there's a lot of subtle attacks that we identified in the process of developing Balboa.
I mean, of course, one way to know would be to get access to a key, which is kind of bound to happen eventually. But it sounds like even in that case, other people using the channel wouldn't be exposed, which is still a nice property to have.
Yeah, and in fact, our protocol inherits the perfect forward secrecy properties of TLS. So even if today you compromised server running Balboa, even if you couldn't go back in the past and figure out which connections were using Balboa, all we'd be able to do is detect feature connections running Balboa.
I see. So if a key were compromised, you would be able to distinguish users that were running Balboa from users that weren't running Balboa.
But only if you also compromised the server. So if let's say I am a client and I'm given the key so I can talk to the New York Times. I have no way of knowing which of the other connections are also using the same key to talk to the New York Times.
I see.
So you would need to, compromise the server and know the key.
That sounds pretty robust. It seems like a reasonable security property for sure.
So there's a research paper that's been published, right?
Yeah, Usenix Security this year. And we will be making the implementation open source as well.
Oh, great. So this will be open source. The implementation, I presume it's a prototype like a lot of the things that we do.
Yep.
It sounded like there was an interesting kind of mix of, in terms of implementing it, right? Because some of our viewers, would be probably interested in that. Sounds like there were some unique challenges in implementing something that's kind of this mix of crypto and systems programming and networking. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So I think for one thing, right, part of the impetus of Balboa was realizing that, well, in theory, you could say, oh, I'll just code something that looks exactly like something else. In practice, that's really hard. So yeah, part of the design goal of Balboa was to make it so that you could write you could realistically write code that is secure without needing to without needing to get everything perfect. In particular, the way in which we achieve this is by using dynamic library injection into an existing binary. So the way this works is that if you have something like VLC, VLC talks to the operating system to say, hey, open a connection or send data along this connection. And we intercept those calls to a particular network socket. And we can go in and say, this is TLS data, extract the TLS keys and basically do a surgical manipulation of this data before it hits the operating system. And that's how we can insert our data.
That sounds hard.
Yeah, it's difficult in part because, so for one thing, we need to make sure that the timings are fast, right? If we're doing rewriting on the hot path, we are rewriting every single read and write system call. So if you want to stream data at 10 megabits a second, like that's a lot of reads and writes. There's a lot of data there. So we've put in a lot of effort to making sure that the timings are fast. So we're looking at between double and triple digit number of microseconds for each rewrite. And we're still working on bringing that down even lower. And beyond that, one of the other complications is that because we are looking at rewriting just the read and write system calls, there's a bunch of sort of extraneous reads and writes that we need to filter out. The filtering part is less difficult, but filtering safely is because, for example, there's all sorts of contexts in which you might want to read or write. So, for example, if in a signal handler, a process is like, hey, I want to write something to the screen, we need to be sure that we're not doing anything in our read and write operations that's not safe to do from a signal handler. So the filtering itself can actually be very difficult to do safely.
Yeah, so the high level of Balboa is kind of like an obvious in retrospect. It's like swap out data with covert data and then swap it back in. But actually getting that right and getting that to a point where you don't introduce the signals that a sensor can pick up on is surprisingly challenging because you have to deal with timing. You have to make sure you're not changing the behavior of the application in any way. And you're fiddling with some very low level stuff, and that's surprisingly difficult.
I presume some of this stuff you've covered in the paper, some of these,
yes,
at least. Cool. We'll make sure to link to that.
And so I guess we talked about, I think you briefly mentioned this earlier, but I want to revisit it. You talked about all these challenges and making sure you get it right. It sounded like you're doing some things to check your own work and see that you're doing it right, to sort of examine these timing things and make sure that, you know, for example, a future commit doesn't introduce a timing thing that used to be there. Are you doing some work in that direction?
Yeah, so in part, we have unit test and integration test, continuous integration set up with all these, which we found very helpful for development, especially on tight deadlines. If we need to make a change, it's nice to know that this small change that really shouldn't break anything didn't actually break everything. Beyond that, for specifically the detectability side, we have also this automated test suite, which collects a bunch of packet captures, acts as the adversary in very simulated network conditions, and captures packets and analyzes the packets to extract various features about statistics for TCP packet size, delay between packets, various other TCP statistics, and then feeds that into random forest classifier to try to determine, is it possible to distinguish these two data sets with any amount of accuracy? So we put a lot of time and effort into that, especially because this particular detectability model is very much a best case scenario. This is a supervised learning technique, which means we have a data set of, this is music streaming without Balboa. This is music streaming with Balboa. Can you tell the difference between these two? In practice, there's like, we've actually been looking, is there, what does music streaming look like? And like, that's a very hard question to answer. So this detectability analysis is very much a worst case scenario for Balboa. But the good news is that Balboa does pass. So we are able to see low rates of detectability even in this worst case scenario.
Yeah, and we found some kind of interesting things that I maybe wouldn't have expected. So we've tried this, say, in the audio streaming case. So we have Balboa working for audio streaming and web browsing. In the audio streaming case, we ran it these classifiers against four different audio streaming clients, VLC, MPlayer, Audacious, forget the fourth, and MBB. And kind of interestingly, the detectability differs across these four. Like, it's never very high. It's in the, I don't know, 50 to 70%, where 50 is kind of the worst case detecting because you're randomly guessing, essentially. But it's kind of an interesting observation that all of these audio clients have different traffic patterns, and different audio clients have different enough traffic patterns that they affect the detectability, which I don't know. I did not expect going in.
Yeah, and building off that, the classifier is able to detect with near 100% accuracy the difference between, for example, the VLC and MPlayer traffic patterns. So one of the cool things, again, about Balboa, because we just operate on this unmodified binary, we can use the same code base, and literally the way we tested this was just like, let's just pull down a bunch of random media players and just plug them in and they all worked. But again, interestingly, they all produce very distinct traffic patterns, which means that if an adversary was like, oh, I heard the censorship circumvention people are using MPlayer, we can just like plug in something else and we're good to go.
Fascinating. Amazing. What's next with this? I mean, sounds like this, it's going to be the implementation is going to be open source. The paper is going to be in Usenet security. What else do you have in mind for the future of Balboa?
Yeah, so there's a lot we can do to improve the, I guess, performance and the size of these shared models. So one of the big downsides, or I guess two of the big downsides of Balboa, is we rely on only being able to swap in covert data for mm-hmm. specific selected items, mm-hmm. like New York Times logo or whatnot. So if that is not a big portion of the data that's being transferred, you're not going to have very high covert throughput. And if you want to have very high covert throughput, mm-hmm. you need these traffic models to be very large. So let's take the audio streaming case, right? You can imagine having a jingle that the client knows, and whenever that jingle plays between songs, covert data gets sent. But that would have a very low covert throughput. The alternative is you have the collection of all of the music that will be played on that audio stream ahead of time, and then you can swap out all of that with covert data. But now your traffic models are huge, and so you need some method to get these traffic models to the appropriate parties. So those are really the two big challenges to focus on going forward. For the traffic model piece, can we dynamically generate these traffic models in some way? Start with like a jingle, and then as the client collects songs that it's been listening to, notify the server in some way that, hey, I now have these songs that I can use in the traffic model. And then supporting higher throughput protocols, or something like Dash for video over HTTP. So you can send more covert data over basically just a higher throughput overt channel.
And a couple interesting things there as well. So first, in terms of dynamically generating traffic, one of the approaches we've been exploring is there's a large number of pieces of software which can dynamically generate music. I don't think it's going to win any awards, but it's all right sounding music for computer generated music. So if the server basically just picks a random seed to use to generate the music, it can communicate just that seed to the client, and then the client can basically generate music using the same seeds. They don't necessarily have to have pre-arranged the exact music they're going to send. They just need to pre-arrange the small, concise seed, but it still generates new music each time.
Yeah, you could even take this to the next level and imagine using like AI, like GPT-2 for generating text, right? And you can have a blog that has, or GPT-3, I guess, is the latest and greatest. But yeah, you can have a blog that's AI generated, but that initial seed to seed that model is shared between the two parties.
This is all just going to end up being used by metalheads that don't want their friends to know they're listening to Taylor Swift, isn't it? That's where this is all.
It's no shame.
That's
in
where
that.
This is all going. Start out with the best of intentions, and it's just
no shame in that. I could talk about this all day. Super interesting work, and I'm glad the world will get to see it. Alex and Mark, it's a pleasure hearing about this. And I guess we'll see you next time you're writing about some groundbreaking research that's it's going to change the world.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have more on the way.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for being here. This was another episode of Building Better Systems. We'll see you next time.